What the fuck is happening, people? Welcome to the General Banter podcast. Today is Sunday the 22nd. Been very busy, as promised, though. I've agreed recently that you should have a weekend podcast. Unfortunately, this one is going up at dinner time on Sunday. This is a bit of a bonus one. This is going to be the audio from the interview that I did with Matthew from the Best of Belfast Instagram account. He does a podcast now. Did an interview with him, and I talk shit. I talk a lot of shit, and I talk a lot about myself, which was so boring that often I would veer off and just forget what the fuck I was even talking about. But hopefully you enjoy it. It's good quality audio, unlike this, which is being recorded straight to Mac, because I don't have the equipment with me right now. But here, I'm doing what I can, guys. I'm getting you a podcast up for you to listen to on Sunday night, Monday morning. We'll have another one out Tuesday, as per, which I'm sure will be very eventful, as me and Mickey Bartlett will be getting ready for the big show on the 25th, Wednesday the 25th, which is our Mandela Hall show, one of the last ever comedy shows. In my opinion, the last comedy show in the Mandela Hall before they fucking demolish the bastard. So make sure to go on shine.net and get one of the remaining tickets, because it's going to be fucking tremendous, guys. Tremendous. Yeah, shine.net. I believe if you buy them on there, the booking fee is only like £1 instead of fucking £2.50 or something. Whatever it is on goddamn Ticketmaster there. So definitely get a ticket. We're going to have limited edition tees on sale. We got the Dead On Mafia t-shirts on sale. At the gig, we're going to have the limited edition screen prints, poster of the night, which we can sign for you if you want, if that means anything to you. But not these aren't printed at a goddamn printers. These are like screen printed pieces of fucking art, goddammit. They're amazing. And that's about it. Once again, thank you to everybody who's been signing up to the Patreon. We're still in the first month. We've hit 100 people, which is fucking phenomenal. And hopefully, you know, whenever we collect the donations after the first month, we can get some really sweet mics and really up the motherfucking quality of this podcast and look into ways of getting basically upping the production value of the whole bloody thing. If you want to support the podcast, that's the way to do it, because you don't have to, but if you feel like you want to, Patreon's the way to do it. Give me $1 a month. Fuck it. Give me $3 a month. Give me $5. And that'll all go into more production of more podcasts. Because I kind of feel like I'd much rather be making this for you guys who actually listen to the podcast, rather than, you know, go around asking people for sponsorship, and then that introduces rules and fucking regulations, and then you guys have to fucking skip through 20 minutes at the start of a podcast because I'm talking about fucking mayonnaise or some bullshit, or trying to sell you fucking knickers. A lot of podcasts sponsored by underwear things for some reason. I don't fucking know. But that's about it, guys. Rate and review. I've also discovered something recently, which if anyone listens to my podcast on the podcast app, the little purple square, which is now available on Android also. So if you're stuck listening to fucking SoundCloud, you don't have to. You can get the podcast app if you got Android or what's the other one? Android and Windows or some bullshit. Anyway, you can get that. But if you've been subscribed for a while and the artwork is a little blue square with me in the middle, kind of looking confused, that's the old artwork. I keep getting these screenshots from people and they're like, listen to your podcast. And I'm like, that's the old fucking artwork. So what you do is within the, you know, the podcast app, just go in, search my name. It'll say unsubscribe if you're already subscribed. And if you haven't been subscribed for a while, just unsubscribe and resubscribe, you know? And then it'll update the fucking artwork, which will keep me happy for some reason, because I'm a, you know, that would really fucking bother me if you're walking around with the old artwork for some reason. Anyway, that's about all I have to talk about. Please enjoy the rest of this podcast, which is, as I said, an interview with Matthew from Best of Belfast. Give him a follow on Instagram. Tell him I sent you. I mean, the guy's way more fucking followers than I do, for fuck's sake. But anyway, that's about it. Definitely grab a ticket for this last Mandela show, because we're trying to make it epic as shit. and we'll be hanging about. It'll be a great night. Okay? So enjoy the bloody interview. Let me know your thoughts via DM. Slide up inside my DMs. Enjoy it. See you later.
The General Banter Podcast with Colin Jettis.
Right about you, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to get yourself and your soul together. This man will make your liver quiver. This man will make your bladder splatter. Let's all welcome the world's godfather of soul.
Colin Jettis.
It's Jettis, actually.
Jettis.
Jettis.
Jettis. Jettis. Jettis.
Fuck you.
Colin, man, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Natural. Just act like we haven't been talking for about 20 minutes already.
Yeah, you know, this is the first time we've ever talked on the mic. Like, it's how you did.
You know, how weird would that be, though, if you just walked in, didn't say a word, just sat down. Hello.
It would be an interesting concept for a show. Like, big David Letterman and all. Like, I'm sure they do, like, so much prep for their interviews. But if you were just to go in completely cold, don't even know who you're interviewing, and you just sit down, you're like, you have George Clooney in front of you or something, you're like, yeah. Hello.
Well, you could tell, like, in his show when there was some star who he didn't give a shit about, and they would sit down, and he's like, going through the papers and all, so you got a single out or something? Yeah. You fucking 17-year-old weirdo, what have you got?
Absolutely. So, the question we always like to start off with, just to give us a wee bit of an idea of who you are for the people who maybe don't know, you walk into an elevator, big right. Liam Neeson's there, how right. do you introduce yourself?
Do I have to?
Well, not necessarily.
If I was in a, if
for
was,
the sake of the question, you probably have
if
to.
If I was in a lift with Liam Neeson, there'd probably be a lot of talking about him for a second. I would go, hello, Liam. I'm a comedian from the same place you're from, nearly.
Happy days.
I do a lot of shit, but I'm not going to be like, you know, I do podcasts and I make videos and I do stand-up and I do live podcasts and
sure.
some things like that.
Definitely. Like, so you definitely, in my eyes anyway, juggle like a lot of roles or like a lot of hats.
A lot of sausage rolls.
And you know, you're a podcaster, you're a comedian, you make videos online, you do a whole pile of stuff.
Yep.
And so like which one for you like comes first or like what do you find you're doing most of the time?
I don't know because it used to be if you were like a stand-up comedian, it was kind of like having a well-paid hobby at nighttime. But now comedians have podcasts. They can make videos all day. They can have a day job and then also go do stand-up at night. So it's kind of just being able to be funny across all those things.
Yeah, so it's interesting to say that because in my eyes, I look at your job now in comparison to like, you know, 40 years ago. I'm like, flip me, per Colin needs to do so much extra stuff.
Yeah.
But do you actually see that as an opportunity to make it more of a full-time thing than maybe you would have been able to before?
Of course. And it's almost at the point now where, you know, I don't even think doing straight stand-up is the way to have the most freedom comedically. I don't think it is. Because it used to be like, oh, you can say whatever you want. But it's still limited to, you have to go to a certain place and sort of bet on the fact that the crowd's going to be good, it's going to be full of people, it's going to be doing well. You know, there's a whole lot of factors, whereas there's other ways to be sort of more creatively free in comedy now, I think. You know, I don't even watch stand-up anymore. Do you
really?
Know? Not really. Like, there's a few times in about the last year where like a favorite comedian of mine would have a special on Netflix and I would just put it on and be like, I can't even watch this and just turn it off after like 10 minutes.
And even that in itself, now people's stand-ups are put on YouTube, they're put on Netflix.
Oh yeah.
And you can watch them anytime you want. They're probably put on podcasts as well.
But people could work their whole career and, you know, waiting for like a Netflix special or something like that, or a Comedy Central special. Or they could get one bit of their stand-up filmed well and it gets 10 million hits online. And it does more work than anything else that any of the traditional sort of mediums like. It's crazy.
So, like, ballpark for us, like, when was the first time you were on a stage doing stand-up?
Well, I'd made a couple of videos, which sort of got noticed by the BBC, and they were shooting a show at the time called LOL, and I got brought in by one of the producers and had to very quickly write some stuff and try and get it out. And then I was hanging about with Mickey Bartlett and Shane Todd and yeah. all those ones. And then I was just hanging out with them. So I was going to gigs and stuff. And then I just ended up doing it. You know what I mean? It was just one of those things. You're hanging about with people long enough. If you're hanging about with six mates and they all played table tennis.
Yeah, of course.
Eventually you would have a go at playing table tennis just to see how it went. Like, you know, but. But I think when I was first on stage was probably like
It was in the pavilion in Belfast. Well, that's a lie, because I went to a gig with Mickey Bartlett, and one of the guys who was running the gig was like, oh, look who we've got here today. We've got Barry the Blender. Come on up. And I was half pished, like, and he pulled me on stage, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing here? And it was terrible. It was very awkward. I had to basically go, listen, guys, I'll come back in a while and do some stand-up, but yeah, this is some bullshit. So that was the first time, but that was kind of very awkward. And then the real first time was 2010 or 11 or something. I can't even remember. I should know the date.
Yeah, probably.
It should be significant. But
was this after school? Like, we're talking after
high
school.
Oh, yeah,
I was
about 20.
Like, how old were you whenever?
I was about 24.
When Blender dropped?
Dropped.
Goosh.
Probably like 23 or 24.
Unreal. I thought you would have been younger.
No.
Interesting.
No, because it might have been like, yeah, about 23. Because I was out of uni, like.
Yeah.
And I was basically working some shitty job. But I had, you see, whenever I went to uni, it was to be a graphic designer.
What?
Yeah, like I like design and doing all that sort of shit. And that's why I love still like branding t-shirts or designing tattoos or something. Like, I like doing that still, sort of, you know, as a bit of a pastime. But like, yeah, I thought I was going to be a graphic designer. And then I was supposed to go to art college over here. And I did a foundation year. And they were like, if you do a foundation year, you'll walk into your course, your degree course. That wasn't the case. I did the foundation year and they were like, oh no, you're not getting in this. And I was like, what? Yikes. That's the only fucking reason I'm here.
Yeah.
So I ended up going to McGee in Derry and doing design and communication, which I think was a bit of a experimental course where you did like graphic design, 3D, product, you know, moving image, you did animation, you did everything. And then you sort of got the pick. But I never would have picked up a video camera ever.
That's insane.
Until they made us make this thing. And I made like a wee video because it was big into like The Office and, you know, Spinal Tap and anything that looked like a mock doc. I love that shit. So I made something and people were like, that's really funny. And I was like, oh, okay. And then the next video I made, I was like, I'll try and make something deliberately funny. Made another thing. And then as like a final project, made this. I mean, it's funny when you think back on now. It was a mock doc about a bunch of mates trying to recreate viral videos. Right. And then the fucking course,
irony.
And then the dissertation, I can't remember the exact title of it, but it was something like how viral videos affects advertising, entertainment, something and something else. It was just crazy, like, when you think about it. Like,
yeah.
And I'm such an asshole. I wrote it once and the guy was like, if you'd like to book a, you know, an appointment to come in and speak to the lecturer about the thing. And I went, I'm paying about fucking $6,000 a year, bro.
Yeah.
You come to my bedside and mark that fucking page.
Exactly.
So I wrote this thing and just never had it look like, you know, looked at by a lecturer. But yeah, it was fucking, I don't even know what the question was now. I've rambled that much shit. What was the question?
I can't even remember. Nah. But so kind of on the topic of Blender, right? I know you probably get a lot of this, but Blender was like the first I Am Fighter.
Yeah.
Was released 9 years ago in 2 days time.
Like, Jesus Christ, that's some research
like
there.
15th of July. Like, I was like, oh, flip. It would have been class if it had been like we were doing this on the 15th. Yeah. So that was like 9 years ago, which is crazy for me because, like, I'm going to show my age here in terms of how young I am. Like, I'm 23, right? So when I Am Fighter came out, like, we were like just wee lads in school and we were loving it and we were like thinking it was class. And we were like, oh, like quoting it for years and years. And for me, like, that was the first time I came across you, the first time I knew about you. And that was one of the first Northern Irish viral videos that I'd ever come across.
Yeah.
And I suppose for you, did you find it a challenge to like diversify yourself after that? Like, where does Blender fit into that? Like, was Blender like the first video that you made that worked?
That's where the story was going a minute ago. Whenever I left uni and I was just fucking about, I was like, I wanted to make a video one day, and that it was I Am Fighter, because it was
that's
like
the video.
Yeah, and because I had a camera, I had a shitty camcorder, and which actually lends itself quite well to a mock doc.
Like, it really works. Actually,
that's what makes people sort of look at it and go, "Is this real or what the fuck is this?"
Yeah.
So, there was a punch bag in my dad's garage, and I had a camera, and that was it. Really, I was like, I might do like a fake hard man character here.
Sure.
And that was it. But then obviously when those videos kind of went big, and they didn't even go that big, I don't even know if I have a video with 1 million hits on it ever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just have hundreds with like 500,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So like,
which is better. You know that for yourself.
Probably,
like, much
yeah.
better.
But yeah. I mean, that's probably why I get into stand-up, because it was like, I don't want to be like this guy who just fucking does one thing. I want to like almost prove that I can actually be funny in real life. And I never did live character stuff ever. I just did stand up, and then I this, and, you know, because it was like, I don't want to be the blender all the fucking time.
Sure.
So I think the second one I did was like the Bestie McDee character, which was when the EMAs were in Belfast, and I went and made a video, and everywhere I went, it was like, fucking blender, all this shit all the time. And we went to see Chasing Status in Mandela Hall.
Okay.
Right. And I made that video, that Bestie McDee video that day, and went that night. And straight away, it was like, where's fucking Bestie McDee, you know?
Unbelievable.
Like it just went from that to, where's Bestie McDee? And then I just did as many characters as I could.
Nice one.
And then I sort of got into podcasting and stuff, and I like doing stuff myself. I like making vlogs, even though they're getting way, way less traction than any of the Blender videos. But then I came around sort of full circle where I was like, I actually do like just doing that Blender character. Yeah, you know what I mean? Even if it's, you know, it's like that South Park effect. It's like South Park say some horrendous shit. Because it's a cartoon, no one cares.
Yeah.
And the Blender thing's the same. If it was me saying all these ridiculous things.
If you were on stage.
Yeah. Well, I probably do say as brutal things, but sure, who gives a fuck? But because it's a character, you can get away with it. You can play sort of ignorant as a character and then say some really, you know, dodgy shit, basically. Yeah. But sort of it started with the Blender thing and then me trying to get away from it for a long time and then being sort of comfortable as a stand-up and whatever and then just being like, I'll just do whatever I feel like I want to do, which is maybe some like daily blend type things or just do whatever I want, really. I don't really think about it as much now.
Because that's something that I was really looking forward to about doing this podcast today, is trying to like find out like Colin. Because like for a lot of people, they know Iron Fighter. They've maybe seen a couple of your other stuff, but like the bulk of the population, like Iron Fighter, I felt like even okay, it didn't get a million views, but this is Northern Ireland. There's like 2 million people in the country. So even if it got like 300,000, that's like a huge percentage of the population. So did you like, was it a conscious thing that you were like, right, I need to actively do stuff to try and you like almost like an actor who like becomes defined by like Frodo. Who's the wee dude that plays Frodo? Is it Elijah Wood or something? Like he has not been able, I don't think I've seen him in anything where I'm not just like, oh, there's your man Frodo. Yeah, or Daniel Radcliffe, where it's like, there's Harry Potter. Well, like, you know what I mean?
He's even worse. Like, he's like, fucked.
It's hard for people like that to distance themselves. So did you actively try to change that, or was it just something that just naturally happened?
No, at the start, I actively tried to change it.
Yeah.
And then the less fucks you give over the year, the years, you kind of just do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I don't really consciously think about like, anything, do you know what I mean? Like if I see something funny, I'll go, oh, that'd be a good daily blend, and I just go do it, and then I put it out, and then people fucking shout quotes at me and I can't even remember what video it's from, do you know what I mean? Like I don't even know anymore. I just do it because it's like a impulsive creative thing to do, and then you just let it go. Like it's just like I don't know, I don't really put that much thought into it anymore. I just do whatever I feel like doing at the time, you know.
Fair play. I think that's why it works.
Yeah, totally. And then obviously the more, you know, podcasts and stuff take over, you start to develop another crowd of people who follow you. So it's not just, you know, the average guy on the street who's, you know, they're sitting on their fucking lunch break showing these stupid Blender videos. You get like an actual following of people who, you know, which means you can go to like I'll go to like the Museum of Comedy in London or do a gig in Glasgow or something, and they're all podcast fans.
Interesting.
And they're all, it used to be if you did that, it would be, you know, a bunch of Northern Irish people and some of their mates. And if, like the last time I went to do Glasgow, did Black Friday. Put the show up, sold out, had to add another show, did two shows in one night, me and Aaron McCann. And the only Northern Irish people there were like Paul McVeigh, who's a MMA fighter who owns the Grip House in Glasgow. You know what I mean? It's like him and then like a couple of randoms, and that was it. The rest were just Scottish people. Like,
interesting.
Which is great. Because they're podcast fans, like, or vlog fans or whatever.
So do you think, like, from a audience perspective, like, so, you know, Blender and like all that kind of social media stuff, even for me, I find social media quite surface level. Like, it might be good for like getting a big reach, but you don't actually really get to go like that deep with people. Whereas a podcast, it's a lot more intimate, and like people feel like they know you, and people are like, feel like they're a part of your life, and you're talking about getting married, you're talking about going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
And people, like, they feel like, oh yeah, like, oh, yeah, totally. I know what he's doing. Like, I'm in his life. Like, da 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 da.
Oh yeah. And yeah, there's just a lot more things to sort of, yeah, you're really sharing experiences with people. Like, the other day I was talking about, you know, they're banning like straws and stuff like that and single use plastics.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know why they're worrying about it so much over here when you go to like Southeast Asia and everything is in a bag and they give you fucking bags to hold your bags. You know what I mean? sure enough, some guy just sent me a thing. Oh yeah, I was in Bali recently, and here's a video, like an underwater video of the sea, and it's a fucking disaster. Like, crazy. You know what I mean? And people, like, they can, there's a, more of a connection, or you mentioned something, and people, or I mentioned about having like anxiety on something. Loads of messages. I did this. I did this. I did this. And it's the only thing. I mean, the only thing wrong with me was I was doing 500 things, and probably probably should have went to sleep the whole time. But that was it. But it's like a different thing. Then it's like a wee family. They're all sending you stuff. And again, that Patreon thing was an eye opener recently. Once I finally get around to doing that,
and you just like explain what Patreon is, because a lot of people might not know what that is.
Basically, it's kind of like a donation service. Like, say if you have a podcast, it's mainly podcasters, and if they gain a bit of a following, but it's very helpful for people probably like me who would struggle to get a sponsor, because a company would listen to my podcast and be like, there's no way we can put money behind this, even though their attitude should be, what's the numbers?
Yeah.
And just give you the money, because who gives a shit? It's no matter what you say, it's still going out to regular people who are fairly normal, probably. Hopefully. So the Patreon thing is for people who are fans of a thing to be able to donate to it. And they have what they call tiers. So if you donate a certain amount of money, you know, you get certain sort of privileges almost. So whether
what's like the deluxe general banter tier?
I'll be honest, I'm still figuring it out, because there's such a range of donations, and I'm thankful for everything, but there's some people you're like, you know, you realize this is every month you're going to be giving me like $30 or something. Yeah. But you don't know how people use that podcast. You might be, you know, a contractor working in fucking Dubai up a crane.
Sure.
And you're like, I would listen to this every day. And if they give you 20 quid a month for you to free you up to you know, to record 2, 3, 4 podcasts a week, I'll do it. Like, you know what I mean? So it is a good thing. And I didn't really understand what it was, because all I could sort of see was people going, oh, I do a thing, help me live my dream by giving me money, even though you're doing nothing, you're just sending me money. I was looking at it sort of wrong. I get it now, if you know what I mean, because what was a hobby is now like a job, because technically there's almost like a monthly wage coming in, and you go, shit, I have a responsibility now, because people have paid for this, and they expect it on a certain day, which is good. So it adds a different level of professionalism, even for me, because you know, the reality is, if you had anything else to do that was paying you, you'd have to do it instead of the podcast for free. Do you know? Like,
no, definitely.
So Patreon, it is good that way. Still early days. I don't know what the General Banter Deluxe package is. I imagine it'll be merch-based. It'll be
nice.
Stickers. And I was thinking of doing a run of like screen-printed posters, like limited edition.
That'd be cool.
Posters. Possibly some t-shirts and stuff like that, but I need to look into it. There was a girl messaged me. She's like a regular to the podcast, and she was like, I'm not being like, you know, accusatory or something was the word she said. She goes, but what, explain to me the fucking Patreon thing again. She was like, is it you want people to pay so that you guarantee you put out at a certain time? And I was like, no, it'll always be out.
Yeah.
There is now a second one. That's, you can do nothing. You can just sit and listen to that for free.
Yeah.
But if you want to support, you could do that. And then for the people who support, there will be certain sort of privileges within that type thing. But then I mentioned some sort of like exclusive stuff, and I was like, you know, you don't have to do this. You can just listen to the podcast. And she goes, yeah, but exclusive stuff. Do you know what I mean?
I want it.
So people do enjoy just cool shit. You know what I mean?
Like, no,
so
definitely. And like, I support a couple of people on Patreon because and their podcasts actually, and they're like, these are podcasts I listen to week in, week out, and they impact my life. And whether it's just, it makes doing the dishes easier because I enjoy listening to it, or it's like, actually, you know, this is like basically the cheapest form of coaching and mentoring I'm ever going to get in my whole life.
Without a doubt, like.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, what I was trying to explain to that girl was, I said it was like opening an online podcast shop, but you've got customers at the door before you've got a stock delivery. That's what it felt like, because I was like, what is this Patreon signed up? There was a guy who had donated to it before I'd even launched it, really.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? He's looked for that. And he's, so I was saying to this girl, like, I'm still figuring out. I'm still trying to arrange my shop here and get things sorted. Like, but yeah, it's mad with like the way you're saying, like the mentoring thing with podcasts, you know, people aren't going to fucking read half the books they would have read like 5 years ago. Yeah. Like you could get some seriously fucking intelligent people who were like, oh, I just listen to loads of podcasts.
Yeah.
With like real fucking scientists and stuff on it. And,
definitely.
You know, now I know a lot of shit. You know, I listened to one the other day and it was, you know, when you're, I love when you get like surprised by a podcast, and it was Joey Theo Vaughn's comedian who is this real sort of hillbilly hick comedian who you would be fooled into thinking he's a bit of a fucking idiot. And then he had on Jordan Peterson and he had this amazing conversation. You could tell like, I mean, I don't even know how I fell for it with a comedian, because most really, really good comedians are very, very smart.
Sure.
Very. You're not going to get a guy who's like, you know, at a really high level, who's a fucking idiot, who just fell into it by accident. You know what I mean? So he's going from like, just talking all this shit, like, I was down fucking, you know, taking cocaine and all this here shit one week, and then Jordan Peterson's on it the next week, and he's like, hanging with him, you know what I mean? He's properly having chats with him rather than just, you know, like, you're a psychologist, what is I dream about dicks or something, which is exactly what I'd say to him in that accent as well. Sure. But I love when you get surprised by things like that. But it is great, like, but, you know, the amount of conversations I've had where I've just heard something on a podcast and then I'm like, oh, I'm a fucking expert.
I'm an absolute genius. Listen to me.
You're talking to someone about like some real bullshit. That's happened a lot recently with that Blind Boy podcast.
Yeah.
People are fucking soaking that up and all of a sudden they're like, oh, I know a lot of shit now 100%. About art. Mm.
100%. So I'm really interested in, like, I'd listened to like loads of podcasts as well. And, you know, the old time you get a comedian on. And I think there was that moment for me where I was like, oh my goodness, like comedians are actually geniuses. Not only geniuses, but like comedians, I think it's a really, really, really tough graft. Like I listened to a lot of stuff about like perfecting your craft and becoming the best you can be. Like my livelihood is writing. So that's my thing. Like I write. So I'm always learning like how to like get better at that and blah, blah, blah. But then sometimes in those kind of podcasty circles, a comedian comes on to talk about perfecting their craft as a comedian. Yeah. And from a really naive perspective, you know, I'm just kind of like, what do you mean? Like perfect your craft as a comedian? Like you just stand up and make jokes. Yeah. And then they're like absolutely not. Like, comedy is so lethal in terms of, it's one of those things where you stand up on stage and you are expected to make people laugh.
Yeah.
And to make someone laugh almost whenever they know that they're supposed to laugh is a really, really difficult thing. And those are like, even big comedians stuff, they just talk about stand-up times where it just goes absolutely terribly wrong, but how they're like really formative experiences where actually they've gone up, they've got booed off the stage like 20 times, but they still do like 1,000 shows. And then they actually find a way to get good at their craft and they actually make it happen.
Yeah.
So that's a very long-winded way to say, like, do you think comedy is a graft? And if it is, like, how do you manage that?
Well, it is a graft, definitely. But I would say the vast majority of people who are really good at it were decent at it when they started. You know, very few people get past, like, if you're shit, totally shit, you know, 10 years later, you're probably not going to be great either.
Yeah.
Unless the shitness was just affected by how nervous you were at the first gig.
Yeah.
Do you know? But like, yeah, I've seen it a few times where people started and they were pretty decent. You're just getting confident on stage. It's a bit like if you're in a band or something, you don't put out like an album of 10 completely shite songs.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you should already be sort of good, and then your first album is good, or maybe sometimes your best one. Do you know what I mean? Stand-up's a bit like that. You get some people are in it for the wrong reasons, or, you know, they're maybe just looking attention for something, and it's some people just get it, and some people don't, you know? It's weird, and it definitely is a craft, because, you know, I could have, say I did a show 3 years ago that you could have went to and went, oh, it was a great show, seen you thing. And if I watched the tape back, I'd be like, what the fuck was I talking about? So it's weird because you're almost like ashamed of the stuff you did like a year ago.
Oh yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
It just seems like a pile of shit.
Yeah, you look back on, you're like, oh my
but
goodness.
To a person who doesn't do stand-up, that's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, I remember even watching Mickey Bartlett whenever I hadn't done stand-up yet, and he'd probably been doing it for about 3 years. And I watched him do a gig, and I was like, what the f-? And I couldn't believe, I was in Newcastle in the Anchor Bar, and we were out the back, and I was watching him, and I was like, I can't believe that he's like my age and he can do that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and in Newcastle, like, why the fuck are we in a tiny bar in Newcastle and he can do that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It blew my mind. You become accustomed to it after a while, and then you know, you start gigging and you start getting some good jokes or whatever, and then you have a set, and then you're doing gigs that the rest of these boys are doing, type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then jump 4 years and we'd like, you know, we take turns emceeing Lavery's and we always gig together and shit like that. But at the start, I was like, this guy's a fucking wizard.
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what I mean? I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then, you know, you learn all the dance moves and you learn all the tricks and you know how to get around it and stuff. And then you stop watching stand-up and then you start to hate it, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And then the things that make you laugh are like fucking, you know, vines of babies being sick. Do you know what I mean? You're like, oh, did you see the new Dave Chappelle? And you're like, nah, but I've seen a fucking, just a goat spitting at someone and then piss myself.
So when you look back on some of your earlier tapes, whether they're videos or whether they're bits of stand-up, like, what do you, if you were to like look at yourself from a very like detached perspective, what do you think you've improved in the most?
Probably that is a difficult question. I don't know. Probably like just production.
Yeah.
Maybe. Just production of things. I think because I did design before, you're sort of like creative problem solving. I think it was already at a decent level, but it gets a lot better.
Definitely.
So you can like, you can just fucking see a thing, and then the journey between that and a finished product is way shorter.
Yeah.
And even like the writing has got like way sharper. Not that I write a whole lot, but you know, if I was doing a set and it was 40 minutes long on stage, there might be like 30 points on that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I used to maybe have a bit and you talk shit for 8 minutes. The bullshit alarm, but you were talking shit for 8 minutes and then you're like, oh, I've got like 2 laughs now. It's like you just take all the fat off it and you've got just like bang bang bang. So just like efficiency of work. I don't know, it's just you just get better at things, you just get sharper at it.
Yeah,
you can do things quicker, you know. You can have an idea, go shoot it, have it knocked out, and have it. I've done it plenty of times where like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, I go, that'll be a funny video. And I shoot it and have it up before like sort of 6 o'clock.
Class.
Do you know, just because I'm able to execute it a lot better. So yeah, just the efficiency.
Streamline.
Probably better at that. Definitely better at stand-up. You know, I'd be better at stand-up in 2 months.
Yeah.
You know, compared to now.
Yeah.
So you just always get better at it if you sort of stick at it. But then the weird thing is, since these sort of live podcasts have come along, again, there's a lot of like things coming full circle for me.
Yeah.
Like I remember doing The Fringe in Edinburgh after like 3 years, and it was supposed to be, I remember the guy that was sort of producing the show for me was like, do what you would do that no one else can do. So it's like, do a multimedia show with videos or sketches that sort of, you know, are interlinked with your material.
Yeah.
Because no one else can really go do that. And I was like, right, okay, I'll do that. It was a bit weird. And first year at The Fringe, didn't know what the fuck was going on. Got some good reviews. People liked it. Some people were like, what the fuck is this shit? And then, you know, you try and do all this shit and you try and be a straight stand-up and all. And then it's come full circle now where I'm like, you know, maybe I should go back and do the things that only I could do, really.
Yeah.
Not just me, but in the circle of comedians that I know.
Yeah.
Which is, do these big live podcasts where you record them. I mean, the last one at the Limelight was a game changer for me because I would just be doing straight stand-up by myself. And then I did this live podcast where me and Mickey were on stage together and I'd sort of prepared a few like sketches that would link into what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And it fucking, like the rate of laughter, you would never achieve that with just straight stand-up.
Awesome.
So I come off stage and me and Mickey just looked at each other and he sort of went, and I was like, what
lad,
the
we've done it.
I was like, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And I was like, that was the funniest thing I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
And we were taking photos of people for ages afterwards. But that's the thing that's went, that I felt like I tried, but it probably didn't have the confidence or skill to pull off. Give it, you know, 5 years.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I can really fucking do that properly now.
Definitely.
When it comes to like production and, you know, just the content of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all that sharpening up over the years has allowed me to go do that properly now. And now it's so good that I'm like, you know, I don't even know if I want to do straight stand-up. It's not fun to just stand there and talk shit anymore.
Yeah.
And like, there was videos. We're doing it again on the 25th in Mandela, which sounds like a plug, but we're going to get it filmed properly because we fucked up the filming last time. So I couldn't really show it off because people were a bit like, what is this? I don't know if I want to buy a ticket for this or not.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the people that did go to the last one in the limelight, they were like, even the camera shots of like the people in the crowd and all, they were just pissing themselves. Like it wasn't like like stand up laughter. Like there's people fucking laughing and hitting their mates and everything. And it was just because the pace of it, you couldn't even.
Yeah.
Like me and Mickey were talking shit, and then we'd play a clip, and everyone laughs at that, and you'd have to stop the clip and bring it back and play it again.
Unbelievable.
And then, you know, just different sound clips and everything. You know what I mean? It was just complete overwhelming sort of thing for the audience. We played this one video, and I'm going to get it recorded properly because it would be hard to put up out of context by itself, there was a video called Interface Diaries.
Okay.
And it was like a guy, it sounded like an American guy, sort of interviewing kids from either side of the peace wall. And it was ridiculous. You know, the guy's like, I just want to ask Dickie if he fucking, you know, does he play the flute or something? You know what I mean? And then they would just go back and forward. And then I was like, oh, by the way, there was a lost tape version of this. And I played it, and me and Mickey reshot it.
Unbelievable.
As these two characters. And we're taking the piss out of, like, first of all, like, say we're looking at that camera there. The guys were going, I'd just like to ask, like, you know what I mean? Like the angles were so bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were playing on that and everything. And I finished the video, and the cheer out of this crowd, I was like, what? I've never had a response like that in my life. And I was like, you'd never get that doing stand up.
Yeah.
Cause it's way more impressive to have all these things going at once, you know?
So what do you think that is? Like breaking that down. Like I loved how you didn't exactly say this, but you almost said, oh yeah, like the laughs per minute metric was through the roof.
Oh, the rate of laughter was crazy. Yeah.
But like, so what do you think?
Because
that concoction that worked.
Because you're doing a live show for people who are used to just probably going through their phone like 30 second clip after 30 second clip, ha ha ha. So
it's like an attention span thing.
Yeah. Oh, so if you're going, look at this video. Here's another fucking story. Like we raced through. I think we did stand up in the first half, and the second half was just under an hour, but it was just fucking relentless. Like
wow.
So I don't know if that. It's just like. It's like doing. It's kind of like multimedia comedy.
Yeah.
So we're listening to two guys talk shit. It's kind of like stand-up, but then there's videos that are related to the thing. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It's just like a lot of stimulus going on rather than... I suffer from the same problem, which is just watching one comedian and being like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And even now I get so fucking... And people probably do it with me, but like as soon as someone starts talking, you're like, I don't like where this is going. Do you know what I mean? Or I see where this is going, or I'm just like, ugh, can I be fucked? Like,
yeah.
And especially, I've noticed there's a lot of comedians who I watch their podcast and watch all their material. Chris D'Elia, probably the latest one, where like, he's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
And his podcast is hilarious when he's just reacting to things, and he's funny when he's with other people in videos. Very funny. But then when you watch a stand-up, because it is practiced and rehearsed, you're like, that. I know that's not you at your funniest. Do you know?
100%.
Like, I would pay in to see him do, like, a live podcast and just talk shit about stuff rather than see his act.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Which is weird, isn't it? If I'm feeling that, other people are bound to be feeling that.
Definitely.
So if you could go see a... Also, there's no point in watching, like, the guy that does the fucking Buy the Blender videos... Or then I watch your podcast, and then I do this shit and whatever, and I watch vlogs, and then I turn up and you do stand up.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
none of those things.
It's almost forced. You're trying to like be like the traditional comedian.
Yeah,
whenever that's not really what you are. Is that fair?
And I was probably trying to make myself that for a long time, just to be like, you know, I am funny.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? But like, that's not what people expect when they see you. So we may as well just do the things that they like.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah. Give the people what they're used to, instead of like you turn up and go, oh, here's an hour of this guy talking shit. I sort of know I can do stand up now. You know what I mean? You know, I know how to write for myself.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I did a new bit of material that didn't sort of get laughs the way the other stuff was getting laughs. Cause you know what's funny for you.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, if I can just write some notes before I do a live podcast, you're kind of doing stand-up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it seems like it's, you know, you've just made it up on the spot type thing.
Definitely.
A lot of it is made up on the spot, but cut it in with some videos and talk a bit of shit. No, and it's just a way more fun experience than just watching one guy talk for a long time.
Yeah.
And then that's what it comes into, like, you know, you'd be sitting watching stand-up and someone gets up to go to the toilet and the guy's like, oh, where are you going? How dare you have a bodily function while I talk?
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just trying to do something new, and it is way funnier. Yeah. So, you know.
So, like, what is your workflow for all your stuff? Like, do you do a lot of prep for stand-up? Do you do a lot of prep for videos? Like, does it start off in writing? Does it start off, like, do you leave voice message on your phone? Like, walk us through briefly kind of like what the kind of flow of work is.
Well, they're all different. So something like stand-up would be, you know, it takes you a while to train your brain to be alert to things that would be funny. So you're like, no, that'd be quite funny. Talking about it on podcasts is funny too, or is sometimes a bit of a sign. Like, if you talk some shit and then someone tweets you like, oh, that was funny, then you're like, there's probably something in that.
Interesting.
And then you make a note of it. And then, but I'm not a big fan of just going and sitting in a cafe somewhere and writing stuff, because there's no urgency.
Yeah.
So like, I would, if I was doing Lavery's, I would just land down, say the show was at 9, land down about 7:30 and sit there and sweat and try and think of things that are funny to do with that bit or whatever, and then just go up and do it.
Yeah.
Rather than like just sit and really, you know, try and calculate some stuff way in advance. There's no fire under your arse.
So yeah, I'm not, sure.
Especially me, I'm not going to do it. Like, so that would be the workflow for that, which is no workflow. Just turn up slightly before with like 4 notes on your phone and be like, fuck, what was I going to say about that?
And do you collect like materials? So you're talking about, you know, someone tweets you. Like, do you ever like formally collect that somewhere, or do you just kind of make a wee note of it in your head?
Yeah, I've got like a list of sort of bullet points on my phone that I'll just write stuff down. I mean, you'll see a lot of comedians, like I've done at Lavery's, where you just take up a wee page and people are like, oh, you can't remember your stuff. Or when you're
yeah.
I can remember it, but it's new. So I'm just going to like, I'm not reading it off the page. There's like 8 points that the only reason a comedian does that, or it says it on their hand, is maybe they have a thing that they don't want to forget to do.
Yeah.
That's actually why it's on your hand. It's not like, there's times you've written a new bit and I've went on stage and talked shit to some guy in a crowd and then I've come off and went, I didn't even do that bit.
Yeah.
Fuck. And, you know, it was a new bit that you've maybe sat in the cafe writing.
Sure.
You know? So, I do have a list, but I mean, it's fucking, half of the things you write down, if you're half drunk or something, then you look at it and you're like, what, donkey cheesecake? The fuck does that mean?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So it's, I don't know.
So switching gears a wee bit here, you've talked a lot about the, you know, the stand-up, and you've got the comedy club, and there seems to be, again, from an outsider perspective, like this community of local comedians, right? Yeah. And there's loads of you guys and you're all doing great. But my question is, maybe it's a wee bit pointed, but like, how do you guys keep the mindset of like being collaborators with each other instead of like competitors? Does that make sense? Like, because I remember like,
oh no,
seeing,
it's totally
like,
competitive.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Of course it is. It's bitchy as fuck.
Really, is it?
Well, at the end of the day, you're by yourself, you know what I mean? I mean, as a joke, like, we did that, well, who was it originally? Was it Aaron McCann? And somebody had the idea to do that Ulster Hall.
Yeah.
So He said to me, like, oh, thinking of doing the Ulster Hall, do you want to do it? And I, like, the term General Banter Comedy Squad was made up as a joke to give it a name. And I was like, just give it the shittest name of all time. But even that, I was like, fuck me. Like, could I be arsed getting into this with these other ones, you know, and probably doing the posters and doing a load of promo and stuff like that. And then you're doing it with like 6 other people. It was good fun and stuff. But straight away, I was like, well, I'll do that by myself next year.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Whatever, I mean, we're all friends, and then within those groups, there are people who are closer, you know. So all the, you know, there'd be like me, Mickey, like Aaron McCann, Shane Todd, Dave Elliott, Roy Woods, Kieran Bartlett, all those ones.
Yeah.
Within that group, you know, obviously Dave and Shane are a lot closer. Yeah. Me and Mickey be a lot closer. You know what I mean? So it's like a group.
Yeah.
Then you got your friends within that sort of thing.
Sure.
And it kind of is competitive. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to be like, I mean, if you spoke individually to all those people, they would all probably think that they were the best comedian in that group.
That's awesome.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not nasty competitiveness, but it's just the sort of thing of like, oh yeah, you did that gig, I'm gonna fucking do 2 shows there. You know what I mean?
It's yeah, like, yeah, 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 yeah.
It's that sort of thing. And especially like...
But that drives the scene forward. It has to. It has to be good for the audience. Like.
Yeah, I mean, that term, the scene, I don't even know what the fuck that means, to be honest.
Sure.
I mean, people have said to me, like, oh, you know, you've done a lot for the comedy scene. I'm like, no, I couldn't get on. And then I started, like, my own club so that I could get stage time.
Yeah.
And then was stupid enough to stick with it for about 4 years. And now it's Lavery's Comedy Club and it does okay.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if... I don't know about saying I did it for me. Do you know what I mean?
That's fair, what I mean? Fair enough. Fair play, yeah.
So, like, there's that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, the good thing about now is there probably was a wave of comedians who you could work here and do quite well here, do a tour of Ireland and, you know, make your money every year. But now with the likes of podcasts and stuff, you know, a lot of the comedians from here can go somewhere else and sell out a room, you know, once or twice a year.
Yeah.
Which is good, because the comedy doesn't really have to necessarily be about here, you know? No one really gives a shit anymore.
Yeah.
Because I always hate things that are like, oh, it's good for here.
That sucks.
That drives me fucking
that's really, really annoying.
Mental. Like, do you know? And it's changing with like comedy and music and stuff where it's like, no, it's just good.
Yeah.
It's good from anywhere. And... you know, people are like, even if you were to work with BBC, they're like, oh, we can't say that. We don't know if anyone's going to understand that and whatever. And you're like, fuck them.
Sure.
Because I've watched things that are Canadian or things that are Australian and you hear a word and you're like, fuck, I must look that up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, you know, you're underestimating the intelligence of people. Like yeah. You're thinking they're fucking idiots just sitting at home. Like some of them probably are, but you know, they're clever enough to make up their own minds.
So
but then,
when you're in England and Glasgow and all, do you just use like the same sort of material? Like the same sort of Northern Irish slant on everything, yeah?
No, there is no Northern Irish slant.
It's just a Colin Geddes slant.
Yeah, because I've never really done... No, I've never really had any real, you know, like things that are just... Definitely things that have happened here.
Yeah.
But not things that like are based on Northern Irish humour or, you know, the sort of blame game angle where it's like blah in Lurgan,
yeah.
Like you're not gonna do that in Glasgow.
Yeah,
you get, well actually Glasgow's a bad example because you probably could do a lot of sectarian jokes,
sure,
over there.
They'd get it,
but like no, you not all this, none of the stuff is. There was an American girl, she was from New York and she was in Lavery's the other week and she came up to me and she was like, oh my god, you're really funny. And I was like, oh, thanks very much. She goes, do you ever work New York? And I went, no. And she goes, oh, you would do really well in New York.
Unbelievable.
Right? And I've never been in New York in my life. Like,
sure.
But it was good to hear from her, because all my favorite comedians are American. I don't like any fucking British ones, hardly, or very few Irish ones. They're all mainly black American comedians.
Yeah.
And to hear that from her was pretty cool, because I always thought, like, I feel like I probably would do okay in America. Do you know what I mean? Aaron's over there. His stuff would do well there. None of it's based here, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Other than Aaron sounds like a fucking foghorn, but an Oma foghorn. But like, yeah, he would do fine. I think I would do okay. There's certain people where it's just like, they just do stand-up. They don't do like Northern Irish political satire or anything that requires you to be here to do it.
It's fair. Yeah. So a lot of people who are on the show are self-employed, they're freelance, they're responsible for their own livelihood. In the terms of like they have to go out and get the work themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I look at someone like you and you've got lots and lots of great stuff going on. You've got the podcast, you've got the comedy club, you've got your stand up, you've got your videos, you know, you've got all these different like pieces to the pie as such.
Yeah.
Like how do you actually make a living? How do you pay for your wedding? Like how do you put roof above your head? Yeah. Like where's the money actually coming from? It's obviously going to be split all over the place.
Well,
but
actually I remember hearing it might have been something like Gary Vee or something. And it wasn't even, it was some older guy, some business guy. And he's like, nobody with lots of money has one source of income.
Yeah.
So just through necessity over the years, like when you're sort of like, oh, I'm doing a bit of stand up and you're trying to find your feet and you're like, you'll take anything. You know what I mean? So there was bits of money coming from stand up. There was bits of money coming from, you know, some merch maybe sold for, like Iron Fighter stuff. There's money coming from different things, but then maybe do the odd bit of branded content for somebody, stuff like that. So nothing really changed.
Yeah.
It basically just, the fees went up, the level of production went up, the things got better, the shows got bigger. And there was a weird period of time where I can remember like being fucking skint one time and just being like, oh, blah, blah, and feeling guilty about wanting to make a video, but I was like, I should be trying to make money instead of video, which was the worst idea.
Yeah.
Because what I should have been doing was just putting out loads of stuff.
Yeah.
Keeping myself out there, and then people will be like, oh, let's try and jump on this bandwagon, rather than sitting there going like, how do I make money, instead of like, how do I just do what I do, and then people will sort of come to me type of thing. So nothing's really changed. It's just like, yeah, the comedy club got a bit steadier, you know, got a bit more established, just, you know, regular money through that, you know, make more videos, get more popular, branch out a bit, the shows get bigger, the ticket price goes up a wee bit, you know, you plan it.
Yeah, yeah,
you know, instead of going like, let's do a show, like you'll go like, let's do like an autumn sort of tour almost.
Yeah,
you know, where you've got like 10 big gigs that all have hundreds of people coming to them.
Yeah.
So everything just got a bit more streamlined and just got a bit more professional, you know, because you were just kind of flailing in the dark before.
Absolutely.
And now it's like, you know, oh, will you do a video for this company? Okay, how much have they got? 100 quid. Okay. Now it's more like, you know, you handpick them because it makes sense and you can actually do something that's quite cool, you know, and then you do a bit more research and you realize like how many hits you could get on a video compared to anyone else in the country or something. So yeah. Then, you know what I mean? Like everything just inflates everywhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just, for me, it was learning to be more of a businessman. And by that, I mean, listening to my wife tell me how to be a businessman.
Unbelievable. And like, how do you make that call? You know, a brand approaches you, whether they're local or international, like, is there a certain, like, you've maybe even never formally thought about it, but is there like a criteria in your head of like, these are the type of people I want to work with, these are the people I don't want to work with? I'm not even talking about industry specific, I'm just saying like in general, like what makes you say, yeah, I'm going to work with that client?
If they more or less let me tell them what to do, because I have to explain to a lot of people, if you want me to do a video, the only way it's going to work for you is if you let me do it the way I would do it.
Mm.
So I can't be all, you know, daily blends and, you know, effing and blinding and doing all this crazy shit. And then all of a sudden do a video where it's like, for flip's sake, what's going on? You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've also done videos for people that I wasn't even in, you know, Boojum and stuff like that. I've done stuff for them where I wrote it and directed it and shot it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't in it.
Interesting. I didn't know that about you.
So I think the General Banter production side of it now is more or less like a small advertising company.
Interesting.
Do you know what I mean? So like I've done stuff for Subway and it was pretty cool. It was like, it was real sort of viral work because they were releasing this sandwich that it was like chili meatballs, chili sauce, chili cheese. And then they wanted to put chili Doritos on it.
Ah.
But they couldn't advertise that because it's so fat bastard that they
yeah.
couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So they came to me. But they were like, is there a way that we can do this? And the meeting was 15 minutes long in a coffee shop. And I was just like, how do we do this without it looking like an obvious ad? Because they were like, we don't even really want to push this as an ad. And I was like, sitting with a notebook, a couple of ideas. And I went, just do like a Barry the Blender's hangover cures.
Nice one.
Right. And the third one is you put the crisps on a sandwich.
Yeah.
So that video did very well. It was like hundreds and hundreds of thousands in a day nearly. It was about, I think I got about 500,000 in a day, which in an NI market, they would fucking love because it was only happening here. And then what would happen was that people would see that and be like, oh, tagging their mates, that's you with the fucking crisps and the sandwich. And then about 2 days later, all the campaign went out in all the shops.
Nice one.
So it was like, oh,
that
yeah.
That was proper, chili. Like incognito stuff.
Yeah, so it was like, they would put, it was like, you know, all chili fucking heat wave sandwich or whatever. And then it would be like, you know, and maybe stick some crisps in there if you want.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We're not allowed to say that because it's, you know, fucking 8,000 calories in a sandwich something. Like.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that was a bit of a sneaky one, like, but I love doing stuff like that. That was, you see, then it strays into the realms of, if you're coming to me for this, tell Subway to come straight to me instead of to the advertising company then to me.
Yeah.
Because you're probably getting fucking four times what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Definitely. And all you did was come for a coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
You came for a coffee and I did your job for you.
Yeah.
So that's when you do two, three of those and then you feel like a bit of a fucking mug. That's when you start to go like, you get into that sort of like fuck you money type territory where you go, well, this is what I want. Because what's your other options?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So then you just go like, well, I'll take it or leave it. You know, that's why I was really trying to push this year, trying to get self-sufficient with like podcasts and whatever, so that I could get really selective with things where you'd be like, you know, I'll do it for, you know, some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you can't pay it, then I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm trying to achieve in the next year, is get to that point where just like we talked, I can't remember if we're rolling or not, but almost like that Joe Rogan thing where all your own content promotes your own product.
Yeah.
So like your podcast, you know, you're basically selling your own merch on your podcast and stuff like that. So I'd like to get to that point probably, even on a much smaller scale.
Well, because that's like, you know, being self-employed and having to do all, everything comes with that is challenging, and, you know, you have to make certain sacrifices. So to like, the freedom is really what you want, or at least that's what I want. I want to be able to be like in control of the type of work that I do. And the more direct, the more you can move that direction is like why I have personally got into like the whole freelance sort of world.
The thing to learn is that like if someone's come to you in the first place, you have to tell them that they're playing by your rules now if it's to benefit them.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing worse than someone going like, oh, we just showed this to Kathy in the fucking office here, who knows nothing about comedy, videos, or anything else, and she thinks that that's a bit whatever. And you're like, oh, right, let me go work all night because Kathy thought it was fucking weird or something. You know what I mean? So you got to...
You got to trust...
You got to almost make them work for you, sort of, and be like, I'll do it, but I'm going to do it my way, and that's how it's going to benefit you. Because I've done stuff even for different companies and it's been their idea and they're like, we've had this idea, could you go do that? And you go do it and they're like, I've actually had someone say to me, this wasn't as funny as like the last one you did for us. And I went, because you fucking wrote this one.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the last one was my idea and this one was your fucking idea.
Yeah.
And that's how unfunny it is, that you think it's not funny.
Unbelievable.
So yeah, you fuck up enough times where you're like, you gotta lay down the fucking laws before you engage with somebody, you know what I mean? So
wrapping this up here, and end of the podcast, we always kind of like make it a wee bit more about like you, right?
Really? I feel like I've talked shit constantly about myself.
No. So I suppose where I'd like to start this wee segment would be like Northern Irish people, we have a lot of great things about us. We have hang-ups just like everybody else. And one of the hang-ups is I feel like we downplay ourselves quite a lot. You know, we're not really good at like telling and being confident about like what we actually do. You know, it's not like, I even love the fact that you said, you know what, I did this live podcast and it was unbelievable. Like, I love that because you know that you've put so much work into it. Whereas the culture here is kind of like, oh, you know, well, it was grand and, you know, oh, yeah, I suppose it went all right. And there was a few people there and, you know, yeah, like fine. Yeah. So kind of in light of that, like in your own eyes, what do you see as your greatest success? Like, to date, like, is there something that you can, like, if you were to really put it on paper, you're like, I'm actually really flipping proud of myself that I did this?
I don't know. I don't know, because being proud of something, I don't know. I really don't think like that. Like, the sort of pride or the achievement or the success or whatever for me is like a percentage rather than like, here's a big goal. You know, yes, done that, super proud of myself.
Yeah.
I'd rather just about an 85-90% success rate.
Sure.
At all times.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, I've done it before. I've done things where like we did the squad gig thing and then I booked the Ulster Hall by myself, which I went and did. And I so didn't give a shit about it. Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was a good gig, like, but, you know, I did two gigs in the limelight after that. Like a spill off from the Ulster Hall, and they were way more fun. So I was just like, it's weird how like people, oh, you're doing the Ulster Hall, mate. It's almost like a mental thing where they'd be like, good for you. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But you do it and you're like, it's just a gig. So I don't know. I just like a level of
the consistency,
all things being good. And I don't really dwell on like, cause it doesn't matter anyway. Like you could do that thing and be like, oh, what? I can relax for a bit now. And you can't, cause you just have to keep going. Yeah. You'd book it again for next year and work towards that. So I don't know. I just like everything at a high percentage, you know, try and stay just everything. Sure. You know what I mean? Try and go to the gym most days of the week.
Yeah.
Try and fucking do this. Try and have all stand-up gigs be good. You know, just keep it all at a sort of high level. I never really think of, like, that was one moment where I was very proud of myself.
Yeah.
I quite like the fact that, like, you know, maybe you know about a few more, like, more comedians from here through doing stuff with me, possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe that.
Definitely.
I don't know. But I don't, yeah, I never really think, I don't really get proud of things. I don't really give a shit. I get proud of silly things.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do you know, like really silly things? Like, I accidentally watched, or like a vlog of my own played after another thing the other day. And I was like, look at the fucking editing on that. Do you know what I mean? But I would never be like, it's not the, yeah, on a vlog that's got like 3,000 hits.
Sure.
You know what I mean? But I'm like, Jesus, look at that transition. That's sweet as fuck.
I love that.
But literally things like that. Or if, yeah, just editing by myself and you do something cool and you're like, woo! Yeah! Check that out. And you're in my garage by myself.
Love it. Like, love it. So on the flip of that, like.
But people from here have a serious problem with their fucking attitudes. Like,
oh, yeah. Like,
I'm grand.
What hang-ups do you think Northern Irish people need to get over? Outside of, like, a political blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, they just have that fucking small pond syndrome where it's like, they can never really fucking give it up for somebody. You know what I mean? They can never be like, mate, fair play to you. That's fucking class.
Yeah.
You know, it's all, it's like the thing, they like you when you're on the way up, and then once you're up there, you get a lot of shit. I don't know, they just have a serious problem with, like, just giving it up for people. It's negative, it's a negative attitude all the time. You know, they think, like, oh, someone's got something. They're like, oh, it's only because his dad's rich or something. You're sure, like, no, yeah. It's probably because he worked like fuck. Do you know what I mean? And if you're going to sit there and do nothing and yap about everybody, that's all you're going to do forever. Do you know what I mean? So, I don't know, there is a bit of a fucking attitude problem.
Yeah.
But then, I don't know, there are also good things, you know, because there are, it isn't like a support system for a lot of things over here, like creative stuff. A lot of people just do their own shit.
Yeah.
You know, I got an email recently from someone and they wanted me to host a fucking thing for Cathedral Quarter Arts Festival.
Unbelievable.
And I went, so for about fucking 8 years, you've ignored every comedian around here. Booked obscure English comedians that no one gives a shit about who come over and talk about the fucking tube, and then you sort of brown nose me a wee bit, like, we always thought you'd be good in a play, do you want to do this thing for me for free? And I was like, no. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's had to go do it themselves now.
Yeah.
By the time you turn around and, like, you know, should we get Shane Todd to fucking host this whatever, he's gone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's good things and bad things. Yeah, there's a lot of DIY attitudes, and then a lot of fucking people who would slobber about you just because you're trying something.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
Who does he think he is trying to do that?
Definitely.
That's annoying as fuck. Like.
It's so annoying. Like, the flip side of all that, like, what's been the biggest challenge for you, like, in this whole kind of journey? Like, let's say in your 9 years post-Blender, post the first IM Fighter.
Just figuring out what I want to do, really.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Because that was a complete, you know, accident. People make viral shit now deliberately and get famous and do things that are clickbaity and that sort of rat race of, like, staying on top of topical things, you know, so that they guarantee themselves a lot of hits or pranks or doing crazy shit. That was literally just because I liked watching, like, The Office and wanted to make, or Trailer Park Boys or something, wanted to make something like that. And I was working in a TV company in Derry at the time. And I remember just going out for a smoke, because I smoked at the time. There was a school bus pulled up in the traffic and they were just banging the fucking windows, going nuts. And I was like, Jesus Christ. And so, yeah, it was all a mistake anyway, but I don't know. I don't know.
Maybe kind of like another way to word that would be, like, if you were to take yourself out for a coffee, out for a pint or whatever, like, before you made that Blender video, like, what advice would you give that Colin, knowing all that you know now?
Fuck me. There would probably be, like, well, you see, I don't know, because the only thing I would probably say is, like, maybe you could sort of strike while the iron's hot a wee bit there at the time, because it kind of just washed over me, like, for a couple of years, like, what the fuck's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, probably did miss out on probably just financial thing, you know what I mean? Like missed out on stuff where it would have been, you know, very valuable to have like a manager or something at that time, but it didn't. But then you got to figure it out yourself. Yeah. So then is it more beneficial? Like
you'll never know
down the line.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, cause you got to fucking branch out and try different things and do like stand up and prove that maybe it wasn't like a one hit wonder type thing. Maybe I am, I don't know. But like, yeah, you got to do that just to sort of prove some shit to yourself. But yeah, I think by the time all the time goes by and you learn all that shit, that's definitely probably more valuable than having someone, you know, make 100%. More money for you at a certain time.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Plus you'd be paying a manager now or trying to get out of that
yeah.
sort of situation.
Yeah.
Right, last question. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland out for coffee, who would it be and why? Dead or alive? I'll give you that. Wee caveat.
I hate these questions. Some people are like, what's your top five favorite albums yeah. or something? Like, I need 3 weeks in a fucking island by myself to remember that shit. If I could take one person out, Jesus Christ. See, that's annoying because I'm trying to think who the fuck, if there's anyone from here that I would be like hugely inspired by.
Sure. No, I get that. Like, that's why I ask it, because for me, you know, it's very easy to look outside of the island for stuff, you know yeah. what I mean? And maybe there isn't. It's fine if there isn't, like.
Oh, fuck, man. That has blown my mind. I would probably end up just taking someone out for pints that I think would be good crack.
Yeah.
That has broken my brain. Do you have one?
I would love to take Liam Neeson out for...
Yeah, Liam Neeson be good crack.
Yeah, just because I remember like this moment where I found out that flipping Qui-Gon Jinn the Jedi was from Balamina.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, that just blew my mind. I was like, whoa.
Now, I might be the only comedian in Northern Ireland doesn't have a bit about the fact that Liam Neeson is originally from Balamina.
Oh, yeah?
And, you know, like on doing Taken and all.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd fucking find you and I'll kill you. Every cunt had a bit like... Well, Mickey Bartlett had the original bit of that. Got that on tape. He had the original bit and about 9 other people did that fucking bit. Liam Neeson, I don't know. Who's good on the pints? Jimmy Nesbitt?
Maybe.
Fuck it. We'll go for pints with him.
Love it, man. So people listening, people watching, what's the best way to connect with you? Or if you could point them in one direction or as many directions as you want, where would you put them?
I would say hit me up on Instagram because the podcast clips get posted to Instagram. All the links get posted to Instagram. And that's how all the kids work these days.
That's how the cool kids are doing, isn't it?
I would have said Snapchat about 6 months ago, but then it's in the shit now.
Then it's down the drain.
Yeah. So Instagram will do.
Fair play.
Slide right up inside my DMs.
That's how it works. Colin, mate, thank you very, very much. Really appreciate you coming on.
No worries.
Pow.
Pow.
Boom.
Pow.
Peace out. Pow. Thanks for listening.